welcome in our man, James Hamm. James, before we talk Sacramento Kings basketball, let's make someone $500 richer. Hey. Kenny found some chump change, well, chump change for him. Great money for the rest of us in the seat of his car, and he's offered to give it to you. It's a $500 e-Visa gift card. It's actually courtesy of Folsom Lake, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, home of the big guy, Vince Bloom. It is the Jump Shot Jackpot giveaway, and the keyword you need for today is dribble. What does Buddy Hield love to do? Dribble.
James Harden?
Enter the key. Dribble. Enter the keyword over at ESPN1320.com for your chance to win this $500 e-Visa gift card. Again, enter the keyword dribble over at ESPN1320.com as part of the Jump Shot Jackpot giveaway, courtesy of Folsom Lake Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram. Again, we welcome in our insider from the insiders. It's James Hamm here. James, we were talking to Chris Biederman a couple of minutes ago. KC said something that caught my attention. Mm-hmm. And we've long discussed, you know, obviously the conversation regarding Doug and Scott Perry. Are these Vivek? Well, obviously Scott Perry is, but Doug Christie. And then, you know, you could throw DeMar DeRozan in there and Zach LaVine. And are these Vivek Ranadive moves versus front office, you know, Monty McNair, Wes Wilcox moves? Is Doug Christie a Scott Perry move, or is it a Vivek Ranadive move? And Kenny acted out this scenario where Vivek gets frustrated with Monty McNair and says, "You're bad at your job. I'm taking over." And that's where Zach LaVine comes into play. Perhaps that's where DeMar DeRozan comes into play.
Did he do voices?
No voices on this one.
No impressions.
And I don't even think I have a question with this, more of just a statement. Just because Monty McNair is bad at his job doesn't mean Vivek Ranadive can do it better.
100%. Like, and you're right.
That might be what we're looking at, is maybe Monty wasn't doing a good job, and maybe in fact Vivek didn't do a better job. Mm-hmm. We've just got the Kings in a position now where you've got Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, DeMontis Sabonis, and you're trying to figure out how to put this team together to do something this upcoming season to keep their fan base interested.
No, real quick, James. This is, to a certain degree, two wrongs don't make a right.
Yeah, right.
Like,
that's how
I was gonna phrase it. Monty was bad and Vivek is bad, like, you're in a bad place. Like, you're not going
to
make it right.
Welcome to Kings basketball.
The thing about it is, The only argument that I have with all this all the time is it's just always getting placed on Vivek, which comes with the territory. That's fine. No need to defend for him or anything else like that. But if the other people weren't bad, Vivek wouldn't be involved.
Mm.
That's kind of what I get to. How we always, you know, during the season, it was a big deal of like, well, how did the Kings aren't any good and they had to fire? How did we get here? Because Monty didn't do this. Like, yeah, you guys are right. If those guys weren't bad, none of this stuff would happen.
Hmm.
And that's just my outlook on it. If Scott Perry is doing a good job, this is what I'm saying. If Scott Perry's doing a good job, you probably never hear about Vivek interfering.
Hmm.
Do your job well, man, and you should be all right.
I was really hoping I would be playing the role of Monty McNair here and you would do Vivek voices and stuff.
You know.
Getting all kinds of trouble. No, that's not happening.
I don't think we've heard Vivek talk enough to be able to figure out what his voice sounds like, other than it's soft-spoken.
Here's my biggest issue is, I mean, I think we understood that this thing was going south, like, super early, right? Like, even last summer, it was going south last summer. And like, you had players coming in and saying they didn't want Mike Brown. You had your star player coming in and saying he would only play for Mike Brown. And you set this collision course for a totally dysfunctional, disastrous season. My issue is, like, look, these things happen. Like, there are times where coaches lose the locker room, or they just get tuned out, or the team's just not performing well, and you need a different voice. But I kind of felt like early on, and even before the season started, that if things didn't go well, that Mike would lose his job, that it was possible De'Aaron would ask out. it's possible Demonis would ask out, but also that Monty and West would be totally cooked. I mean, that's kind of like how we walked into this season. Like, well, if things go well, you know, they should be a 51 team. If things don't go well, what does that look like? And what does that mean moving forward? And there was this snowball scenario that we set forth, which is pretty much all worked out as we thought it might. My question has always been, like, when you started to know that this thing wasn't going to work out and you knew that De'Aaron Fox was going to want out and all that stuff, why would you have the guys that you also knew you're likely going to fire, like, make the decisions that are, like, franchise-altering? Like, trading De'Aaron Fox is franchise-altering. You know, I heard our good friend Jerry Reynolds say it the other day. Like, the Kings don't have a player as good on their roster today as good as De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox was the best player coming into this season on that roster, and he would still be the best player on that roster today. And he's no longer there, and bad contracts and other things are. And that's not to bash on Zach LaVine or anyone else, but again, if you were going to go for a reset, unless you really thought that somehow, like, you were going to make this catastrophic move in the middle of the season and everything was going to go spectacular and you were going to elevate your team to championship level, like, why would you have two guys that you clearly had been losing faith in so much that you stepped in and played a huge role in the actual trade itself of De'Aaron Fox? Why would you let these guys be the ones that made those decisions that did all of the final details on the deal? Like, the Fox situation did not have to be addressed until after the season at all. And I just don't get it. And so that's where my problem is always going to lie. It's like, look, it's one thing to, like, kind of get in the middle of stuff and start pushing buttons and start saying, hey, like, we need to change everything. But it's a whole other thing if you're just going to make a mess for the next guy. Mm-hmm. Like, that, like, Scott Perry is walking in with a clean slate as far as draft picks goes after this draft. And so that's a good thing. At least Scott Perry has that. He's got 9 first round picks and a bunch of second round picks and all that stuff. But he also inherited, you know, 2 years and $95 million of Zach LaVine. And he inherited, you know, like, whatever DeMar DeRozan's contract is at this point, like $25 million and a $10 million third year buyout. I just think that if you were going to make such a dramatic move, such a catastrophic move, that you made one during the season, which totally changed the direction of the season, you should have waited and allowed whoever was going to make the next one to make that second move.
Do you think so? There's a couple questions I have, just because I don't know if I've ever really talked with him about this on the air, but I'll start with this one real quick. Do you feel like they were, do you feel like they were blindsided at all by
De'Aaron?
Blindsided that he wanted out?
Yeah, I know what he said in the summer. I know what he said in the summer. But from everything that we could gather, I know what he said in the summer. But from everything that we can gather, everything seemed to be going cool until they got to Brooklyn. And then somebody found out that somebody was talking to somebody, and then it was all hell broke loose. That was a month after Mike Brown had been fired. They were playing well. Fox was playing well. And remember, they get to Brooklyn, and De'Aaron gets pissed off.
We're talking about weeks.
No. Right. So for weeks, so my point is, it wasn't Mike Brown was fired on Friday. On Saturday, representation is talking to the Kings like, hey, you already know what it is. Get me out of here now. We had gone weeks where things were cool. They were playing good basketball.
Pretty close to a month.
Going cool. We were playing good basketball. Something happened on the way to Brooklyn, and then all of a sudden it was like, get me out of here now. Do you think they were blindsided in that respect?
I'm trying to remember when Rich Paul came to Sacramento and sat courtside.
It was that the Lakers? I feel like it was the Lakers because I thought everyone was being ridiculous about this when LeBron James, Anthony Davis are here.
You're right. It was a Thursday. They had the two games against the Lakers. That was a Thursday night. They played on a Saturday against the Lakers. He was here for the Thursday.
Yeah, it was the 103-99 loss, which was in the middle of the losing streak. Right,
which is December 20th.
It was either December 19th or December 21st. I don't remember which one of those two games it was, but those are two Laker games that were at the Golden 1 Center.
Yeah. No, look, I mean, at that point, like, I think a lot of the cards were on the table.
So,
like, I think mostly, like, people understood what direction this was going. If they were going to fire Mike,
So Mike hadn't been fired yet, but I know Rich didn't ask for a trade that night. I know Rich was saying stuff that night. Mm-hmm. He was asking for help. Okay.
Well, let me ask both of you guys this, Rook, while you think about that.
Well, no, I'm not thinking about it. He didn't say it to me, so I can't repeat. But I don't think he was like, no, De'Aaron loves Sacramento. I think it might have been, man, a five purple jersey would look, purple and gold jersey might look nice. Hmm.
So let me ask both of you guys this. Why was there this unbelievable, oh, that's what you're doing? Get me out of here then. That's what was happening. Whatever Wes did that week, they went to Brooklyn. That's when everything got set off. Mm-hmm. Am I off on that?
I don't think so, no.
When I talk about being blindsided, we're going a month where I guess everybody thought it was cool. And then Wes does something, takes a phone call, and it gets back to De'Aaron. And then it's, oh, get me out of here if that's what you're trying to do. Hmm. So that's what I mean when I say, were they blindsided by that? Probably by their own doing. Like, maybe if Wes didn't do that, maybe we never even have that conversation.
Yeah, like, look, I think everybody, they weren't on the same page. What they were is on their own individual pages, understanding where they wanted to go as people. And so what I mean by that is I think the front office, they were put on notice. They were told, like, hey, your roster sucks. Why are you not addressing the roster issues? And if you don't want to address the roster issues, then De'Aaron's not going to want to be here long term. And, like, we've asked you specifically to address things with the roster, and you have repeatedly not addressed those things. And we need to know what the direction is of this franchise, or if our client is wasting his time here in Sacramento. And I think at that point we had already seen the beginnings of the fraying of a relationship between the front office and Mike Brown. Clearly they had their agenda and who they thought would be the fall guy, and, you know, to delay whatever was going to happen. And that's kind of how they acted. I mean, this isn't the first time this has happened. You've seen it happen a bunch of times where, you know, a general manager, assistant GM, you know, they know that they're on the hot seat, and to deflect from that hot seat, they fire a coach. But they knew going into it that when they fired Mike Brown, that meant De'Aaron Fox was going to instantly want out, and they acted accordingly. They did not wait around for Fox to sit there and tell them after that. They knew exactly what direction Fox had told them in the summer, and they believed that was the way it was going to go. And this is what Monty said when we finally did get him, that, like, look, we knew exactly where, like, I talked to Wes right after the firing, and he said very clearly, we know exactly where each of the players stand on this situation. We did not make any move they did not go to the players and address them individually beforehand, but they knew where every player stood before they actually made the move to let go of Mike.
So two things. I'm sorry, Dame. Two things, because I need clarity on what the hell's going on here.
Oh, clarity. God damn it.
So there's one situation, one statement that I think I wonder, I don't know how this played out, but this was the fault of Monty, Wes, and I'll even put Vivek on here. And I don't think they ever had a reset with De'Aaron Fox after they fired Mike Brown. I think they just, well, he told us in the summer if we fired him, he wanted to be gone. So we'll just trade him. Like, no, you sit down and you talk to him at the very least and say, is this still how you feel? Is this still what you want to do? Because if you've changed or you see the circumstances have changed and you want to stay here, I want to know that so we can keep working with you. I don't think they ever had that conversation. And that, once again, Monty, Wes, Vivek, that is a fail on all three of their parts. Number two, if the whole thing of we know where everybody stands is what they went by, was the whole, maybe you guys don't have an answer to this, but the whole thing that week on the way to Brooklyn, was that just performative? Was that fake? Fake outrage of, oh, I can't believe you're calling somebody. Well, then trade me now. Was that performative? Because if you already told them, and everybody's already under the impression of you, if you get rid of I don't want to play for another coach, you get rid of Mike Brown, I want to be traded, then there should be no surprise that they're taking phone calls.
So
does that make sense?
It does. I might be able to answer it. I might not. All I can do is go off of the man's word and what he said to us.
Mm-hmm.
De'Aaron said, I thought I was going to be traded in the offseason. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I was like, they knew where I stood. I knew I was like, they knew. I just thought it was going to happen in the offseason. I didn't think it was going to happen during the season.
That's so because of that, he was blindsided. Fox was blindsided by the fact that they were trying to get a deal done during the season. And that's why he maybe reacted.
Believe happened, and James, maybe you have more on this than I do, is that calls came in. They took them to Rich, and De'Aaron was like, well, if this is what we're doing, I'm going to San Antonio. And that was
it. Yeah, I mean, I think everything spun out pretty quickly. Once it got to a certain point, like, I think everybody understood that De'Aaron wasn't happy with what happened. But again, you have to remember we have the next step in that process. And this is why you're saying it was a performative. De'Aaron Fox went out to dinner with Mike Brown. And that was very clear, a sign that we're in team Mike Brown. And you have to understand the component of this, that by choosing not to have a press conference when they fired Mike Brown, the blame nationally got heaped on De'Aaron Fox because he was the one that Mike Brown called out the night before he got fired.
Real quick, James, whose fault was that now that we know some stuff?
Whose fault was what?
Sounds like it was Monty. Wasn't the report Monty refused to have a press conference?
Correct. Correct.
Well, yeah, but why did Monty refuse to have a press conference?
Why did he refuse? So the fact that he didn't have a press conference and it was blamed on De'Aaron Fox sounds to me, tell me if I'm wrong, sounds to be Monty McNair's fault. He refused to have the press conference to clear the air.
Yeah, but you didn't answer the question.
Because he didn't want to fire him. So what? That's your job. You handle your job. You exit. Your job, just like Vivek's job or his responsibility, is to get up and have a press conference to introduce the new general manager or whatever. Monty, your job is to go up there and have a press conference after you trade the star player or you fire the head coach. That's your goddamn job. And that's the problem. People think they don't have to do their job because they can put the blame on somebody else.
I don't think that it was putting the blame on someone else. I think he refused to do the press conference.
He should have been fired at that point. Well, he should have been fired
right
there.
He should have fired. He should have been fired, or he should have quit. Like, in all honesty, if you felt that strongly that you did not want to fire Mike Brown, like straight up, if you felt if Monty McNair felt that it was not his decision and he was not behind it and he did not want to fire Mike Brown, all of those things, then you tell your owner, like, look, yeah, I'm like, if you want to fire me, that's fine. Go ahead and fire me. Like, because that's what I know.
Yeah,
you could
have saved yourself some money. Fire him for cause. But can we?
Yeah, but
can we bring this anyway. All back to today? Because we just laid out the season and the most climactic points of the season, which brings me to the point that James brought up. And how could you have lasted to the end of the season under these circumstances to allow Scott Perry or, you know, future general manager to deal with this De'Aaron Fox trade? Like, I understand it. And maybe hindsight, it doesn't matter. The Kings season sucked. Mm-hmm. Like, everything went to hell. They didn't make the playoffs. It doesn't matter. But I don't know how, like, I understand the idea of trying to salvage it and figure it out later. Like, I understand that. Now, you could clearly, you can argue whether it was the right move or the wrong move. It certainly, nothing good came about of it. I just don't know how you, under these circumstances, get to the end of the season and go, okay, De'Aaron, no, hang on. We got to fire Monty, and then we got to hire Scott Perry. Scott Perry's going to have to deal with the coaches. Don't worry, little fella. We'll get to you. I just don't know how you do that, especially and James, you know, like that's Rich Paul. Like, you know, especially how powerful agents are. It's not just Rich Paul, but how powerful agents are in this league.
I'm just going to take it to the, like, they had an out with Fox the whole time. They had an out. So if they didn't want to trade Fox right then, but they wanted to trade Fox by the end of the season, you know, if they were going to wait until the off season to trade him, they could have just said, go ahead and shut it down and go get your finger surgery.
Mm.
Like, they could have just waited. And that's the problem. Like, you know, I live by the, again, to reference my friend Jerry Reynolds, like,
we're not allowed to be friends with Jerry. I thought well, you were aware of this.
I still am.
We're contractually forbidden from being friends with Jerry Reynolds.
But if you have a 5-year plan in the NBA, you have no plan at all.
Mm.
That's the NBA. You have to live and die in the moment, and you've got to be able to have a long-term and a short-term and a medium-term plan, knowing that all of those plans can change on a dime, right? And so for me, like, they're easily, I would have pushed off this decision until the summer. And I would have hoped that, you know, again, we had players-only meetings, we had starters-only meetings, we had coaches-only meetings, we had everybody-only meetings, like, whatever. We had all these meetings all throughout the year. I would have had to sit down with De'Aaron Fox and said, look, we want to prove to you that we still love you and we still want you here. And if by the end of the season you don't want to be here, that's fine. But we're going to go a different direction because, you know, we think we need a new voice in the room. And Doug is that voice. And we know that you've had a good relationship with Doug. We would like to see what you guys look like together. And if you feel like at any point that, you know, you just need to shut it down, that it's not working, that's fine. You can shut it down with the finger issue and go get your surgery, and we are totally fine with that. But we're going to address this after the season. And the problem that you have here is this is an adult conversation that is not a general manager having that discussion. Because a general manager in this situation, you're being honest with a player and saying, hey, we may or may not have this managerial group making the decision, and we would prefer that whoever is going to be making that decision this summer is someone who's going to be here long term. And that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead, you had a haphazard trade for a player who, you know, we already knew wouldn't fit next to DeMar DeRozan, but who you just tied $96 million in contract up into. And it's tough. But, you know, again, you guys know my opinion on Zach LaVine. I think he's a gifted offensive player, but there are too many question marks, and there are going to be too many question marks, you know, during his time here in Sacramento. And so I would have just, you know, again, if Scott Perry was going to be the guy, do the other thing. You could have just fired the GM and the assistant GM and had Scott Perry do the deal in February, or not do the deal. And sit there and get his advice. If that's what you were going to do, if you knew that what firing Mike Brown would trigger, then you should have known what the next steps were going to come out.
Should have gone Denver Nuggets. Fire everybody.
Well, yeah, but someone could say, like, hey, we didn't know what was going to happen. It's like, okay, 2015, what happened? Your team fell apart. You fired a
head coach. It's like, what happened in 2015?
You fired your head coach 24 games into a season. You were 11-13. You thought you were going to make the playoffs. The next guy went 7-21, and the next guy was an absolute disaster in George Karl. That's what happened. I mean, that's typically what happens in these situations. And so, like, know your history, learn from it, move forward. But that's not what happened.
We'll come back because this is fun. This team is just so much.
I didn't think we were doing this today. What are we doing today?
Well, I don't know. What else do you want to talk about?
How about the new head coach, the new general manager?
Well, let's talk Doug Christie and Scott Perry when D'Lo and Casey return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. We are back. No, we're coming back. We are back. We're here. We're live, pal. Radio show. A professional one at that. James Hamm with us. We're tired of arguing, especially about the same stuff we've been fighting about for like 4 months. Mm. James doesn't even want to make the metaphors that make me laugh anymore. You said, hey, let's talk about the new general manager. Let's talk about the new head coach. Doug Christie officially named the head coach earlier this week of the Sacramento Kings. It's something we kind of felt would be the case. What and now, of course, as soon as that tweet went out, speculation began about how that speculation went about as to who actually made that hire. How do you think, because I've given my feelings on how I think this process went with Scott Perry, Doug Christie, and almost certainly Vivek Ranadive, how do you think this process went that landed Doug Christie his first head coaching gig in the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Doug got the job last week, and we're just waiting for the official announcement. Mm. You know, I think the one thing Scott told us that he was going to wait a week. He's going to have conversations. He's going to have a ton of conversations. I continue to hear that, I mean, this dude's having conversations with everybody in the building. Like, he wants to talk to locker room attendants. He wants to talk to ball boys. He wants to talk to everybody. He's having a top-down conversation with everybody to make sure that he understands what the situation is, how we got here, how do you get out of this situation, how do you move forward, how do you make things better. And to me, that's the biggest thing with him, with Scott Perry. He's like the biggest professional in the room. And that was the impression I got from him 8 years ago when he walked in the door and like instantly wowed you. Now, again, we can analyze his first draft and his first free agency and all that stuff, but it comes with the idea that at that point, you know, Vlade Divac is still the general manager and he's not, that, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening. All I know is that there was so much enthusiasm for the fresh voice in the room and the direction that the team was going out of nowhere, and somebody who had a very strong grasp on how to run a front office. Now, when it comes to Doug, like, look, I personally, you know, again, I can bring up 2015 again and Michael Malone getting fired, Tyrone Corbin getting absolutely like overwhelmed, George Karl, you know, stumbling to the finish line, all of that stuff, right? Yeah, maybe it was 2014. I'm not sure. But either way, what Doug Christie did to me was remarkable because, you know, again, Tyrone Corbin had a ton of head coaching experience. He was a head coach of the Utah Jazz before that. And he went 7-21. You know, if Doug Christie would have gone 15-36, then I think we'd have a different understanding of what happened today. If he would have gone 20-31, whatever it is, like, again, it would have been like, okay, let's have a couple more candidates in here. But to put somebody with, a coaching staff that's not his, a shorthanded coaching staff that's not his, traded the best player on the team 3 weeks into his tenure, you know, bring in a bunch of new players, deal with injuries, deal with the Malik Monk starting, not starting, deal with all of the chaos that happened this season. And you were to tell me that anyone, I don't care what, you know, what his name is, could have done a better job than 27-24. I wouldn't agree with you. Like, this was chaos. It was wild. It was out of control. Did Doug make mistakes? Sure he did. But he's a first-time head coach, like playing with a short deck, playing with a coaching staff that, again, isn't his, doesn't know him all that well, and a coaching staff that started to leave. You know, he was already short. One assistant got down two assistants. So I personally think that Doug deserved another shot. If they didn't go that way, I could understand that as well. But look around the league. I mean, you know, again, JJ Redick was a podcaster and got a job, a podcaster and a television like analyst, right? He got a head coaching job. And another analyst, Chauncey Billups, got a head coaching job. Like Doug Christie has every bit of the credentials that a lot of these head coaches, and a lot more than some of these head coaches. Right now, not only does he have 3.5 years as an assistant coach, he's got 51 games as an interim head coach. He's got 15 years play as a player. He's got analyst experience. Like, I know people are saying, oh, well, you could have had this coach or you could have had that coach. But like, okay, like everyone keeps giving Mike Budenholzer money and he keeps taking it because he should. And then he works 1 or 2 years and then he's out the door. You know, Frank Vogel is getting paid like $5-7 million a year to sit at home.
Neither one of those guys are more appealing than Doug Christie. It's not even close.
Yeah. So like at what point do you just keep going after the same retreads or do you try something different? And again, Doug put in the time. He did the 3.5 years as an assistant coach. And
the funny thing is like people always want the new hotness unless it's your new hotness. We talked about this the other day. Kings fans were so agitated when the list got, when this long coaching list that leaked got narrowed down to, I think it was Mark Jackson, Steve Clifford, and Mike Brown, and the Will Hardys were gone, and the Darvin Hams were gone, and I'm leaving one, Charles Lee. Charles Lee was off the list. And it's like, you ain't seen none of them coach a game. Darvin Ham is a goddamn punchline now. Charles Lee is fine. Will Hardy is just rotting away in Utah waiting for them to figure out their plan. And you got a guy who you love in Doug Christie who coached 50 games last year. Oh, no, we're bringing something different. It's like, people want something different. They just so they can be mad about it. We need an established coach. Great, we got Mike Brown. No, we needed it. We needed Will Hardy. Oh, God, Will Hardy's such a great coach. Oh, based on what? The hell you know about Will Hardy to coach? You didn't even see Will Hardy coach his first game until this past year, a year ago. You've seen Doug coach.
Right.
You know Doug. You saw Doug give that speech, you know, at the Beam. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, we should have called Adrian Griffin. That's what we need. What?
Well, Dame, and you said something there that I want to circle and kind of draw out. You said everyone loves Doug, right? The flip side of it is, just so everyone is clear on this, Doug Christie loves everyone else. Mm. He loves Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
He loves the Sacramento Kings. He loves Sacramento Kings fans. He is embarrassed that hit the product that the guy before him put on the floor had a sub-500 record at home. Like, that was an emphasis to put on a show for your home crowd, that this group deserves more. He has unfinished business. And I know all of that can sound like it's some sort of catchphrase from Doug, but again, why do Kings fans embrace players who say, I love Sacramento, I want to be there? Everyone thinks Malik Monk is the best thing ever because he says, I love Sacramento, I want to be there. I don't want to leave. I don't want to go anywhere. They love Trey Lyles when they said it. They absolutely adore when Keegan Murray says, yeah, I want to talk extension this summer. Okay. Well, Doug is also saying it. Not only that, but Doug spent a bunch of time
Zach
as a coach.
Zach LaVine said, I love Sacramento, how they respond.
Well, yeah, but look at Doug spent like 4.5 years as a player here.
Mm-hmm.
Then he came back.
Mm-hmm.
And he did all of the necessary steps to be a broadcaster, to be good at his job. He's brought in to be an analyst part-time, splitting with Bobby Jackson. That goes into a full-time job. Next thing you know, they move him into the lead analyst job. And like every step of the way, those things happen because Doug worked his ass off, because he's good people, because people trust him, and because he was good at his job. He kept moving up the ranks. Then when it comes to being, you know, he gambled on himself. He threw away an afternoon radio show. He threw away, you know, the lead analyst job on the broadcast, making plenty of money to be an assistant coach. And I told Doug this years ago, the problem with being an assistant coach is this. As soon as the head coach gets fired, there's a good chance that you're out of a job. And can you go get, number one, your radio job back? Can you go get your television job back? The answer is no and no. And also, by the way, are you going to be able to be an assistant coach somewhere else outside of Sacramento? And there's a good chance the answer to that is no as well. Players who stick around and be coaches for their for a franchise they played for, it's usually a tie that binds them to that franchise. You know, Bobby Jackson is now in Philadelphia, but for years, Bobby Jackson was only an assistant here. He went to Minnesota for a little bit, came back. You know, so, like, look, I think Doug has done everything you could possibly do. He said everything that you could possibly say, and in all honesty, he's meant every word of it. He loves to be here. He wants to coach his team. He wants to lead this team to a championship, and he hopes that he's the guy that delivers. And I would much prefer that than paying some dude $10 million a year who did it somewhere else but isn't fully committed to the community or doesn't have deep ties to the organization or anything else. So,
real quick, Casey, two things that are absolutely true. One, Doug believes that the Sacramento Kings can win a championship. He absolutely believes he can. This team can do what no one believes is possible. He absolutely believes that. But you said something there a second ago, Hammer, that I really hadn't thought about before. But it is it really points to the type of person Doug is. Doug did come back here and he wanted to coach. Like, that's why he came back. The radio opportunity was there for him and he took it. That man had never done radio before. He didn't know how to do radio. He wasn't really sure what to do. And he's working with one of the most difficult personalities to work with, not just in the market, but in radio, period. And he had to learn to find his voice with that voice. Then he got married to him because they started doing the television broadcast together. Another thing he had never done before. And he's replacing arguably the most beloved Kings figure in the entire ever. Fan base. Yeah, yeah, ever. And he did it. And he attacked it the way he attacks everything. Like, he poured himself into it. He learned. He studied. He asked questions. He would ask me about preparing for shows, not knowing what Grant's going to talk about, not knowing how much hockey he should watch versus how much football he should watch. And he would just prepare and prepare and prepare, and he would ask questions. And there was a difficult time, you know, in 2016 where he'd tell me, like, I don't know how to approach this on the radio. And I told him how I felt. And he was like, okay. And when he didn't understand something, when he didn't know something, he asked what he just wanted to get better. Mm-hmm. He wanted to get better at radio. He wanted to get better at being a television analyst. And now he wants to be a great coach. Like, give me that guy 10 times out of 10. Give me that guy 10 times out of 10. That's who Doug Christie is.
Yeah, the motivation is 100% pure. That's it. Like, his goal is to deliver a championship to Sacramento. And this isn't where he grew up. I mean, we all know he grew up in Seattle. I mean, this is where he's made his home and his life. And he wants nothing more but to see this thing through. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's noble. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, it might not work out. Like, I'm just being real because that's the way this job is. It's tough. It might not work out. But at the end of the day, like, I do think that you chose the right guy who has the right motivations. Now you have to support him the right way. And I'll just keep saying that. Like, let him bring in the coaching staff that you've never spent money on before. And I saw someone earlier say, let's be honest, this is because it's a financial situation. Like, how does anyone know that? Like, because last time I checked, Doug Christie's contract isn't out there. We don't know what Doug made yet. And to say that this was a purely financial, like, decision, that's just, number one, is ignorant. Because you have no idea what Doug Christie's getting paid. I don't know how much Doug Christie's getting paid. So that's number one. Number two, like, this team has to open its pocketbook and go get really, really high-end assistant coaches. We're starting to hear names here and there, but, like, Doug should have a group of people that he's very comfortable with, number one, but also that supports him in the right way. He needs one or two assistant coaches on this staff that have head coaching experience and are NBA lifers and know exactly what it is that they need to do. You know, guys like Jay Triano, whether it's Jay or it's someone else, that's what Doug needs. He needs support, and hopefully he's the right guy.
I just chuckled, James, because, you know, people who don't know the person that lives next door to them, they know everything about the ins and outs of basketball and all this other stuff. And the difference between me, Dame, James, and some of the people that comment like that is, I'll tell you, I don't know everything. Some of the things are my opinion. Some of the things I'm talking to people and I hear things. It's not but even then, that's just one side of the situation. I'm not sitting in the rooms. I don't know anything. But at the end of the day, you'll have all these people that just know everything. They know everything and they know exactly how they would handle every situation in this fictitious world they live in. And it's just, it's cool. Everybody can have an opinion. It's just interesting to me when I see that kind of stuff. But I think Doug Christie.
Kenny, his agent is Rich Paul. If you think Rich Paul is just going to get pushed around by the Sacramento Kings because they paid some other coach and still have to pay them, you're wrong.
I think Doug Christie deserves this opportunity, you know, and once again, I don't know what the outcome is going to be and what the production is going to be, but like you've laid out a number of different times, James, he's gone through the proper steps, the proper channels. Damien, you talked about it as well. He dedicates himself to being successful at whatever he does. And once again, that doesn't guarantee that he's going to be, you know, an NBA championship coach, but one of the things you can't necessarily control those type of things. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. You can't control whether or not you win, especially as a coach when you're not out there on the floor and all this other stuff. What you can control is your approach and how you treat people and how you try to galvanize the guys that you're supposed to be leading. And those are things that I think I believe Doug Christie does as good as anybody else in the league. Like that's his special talent. You know what I mean? That's his elite attribute, is how he's able to galvanize others and how he's able to bring people together. And yeah, I'm just like you guys. I'll take a chance with that combined with what he's already done to be deserving of this opportunity.
Yeah. And for me, like, look, the biggest thing is, like, I watched the struggles of this season bear down on him and, you know, him get surly. Whether it was with me or Matt George or Sean Cunningham, like there were moments. Jeremiah, he got surly with Jeremiah quite a few times. Shout out Jeremiah. He got hollered at a couple of times. But what I was watching was somebody who was overworked, wasn't sleeping. And all of these were symptoms of one thing. They were symptoms of an underlying issue, was that he was working with a group of coaches that weren't his coaches and he was understaffed and he felt like he had to have his finger on the pulse of every single thing that was happening. And you quickly learn that that's nearly impossible as an NBA head coach. You've got to have people that you trust. And that's why, you know, losing Jordy Fernandez after year one was a horrible situation for Mike Brown. That didn't help Mike at all. Like, and that's a seasoned veteran NBA coach who lost one of his lead assistants. Like there was a way in which, you know, like this thing could have been different, but I just don't think that, you know, Doug needed some more people that he felt comfortable with and trusted 100%. And it's not easy to just create that out of nowhere when you're taking someone else's job midseason. And everybody knows, I mean, that's what this is. One guy gets fired, another guy takes his job, and all of a sudden he's the boss. And there are people in that room who are like, why is he the boss? Why am I not the boss? Why isn't this guy next to me not the boss? There's a lot of dissension. And there's also the guys in the room who are like, well, we don't agree with the other guy being gone. And so it's just a really difficult situation. And again, I think he handled it with grace and elegance as best he could until he got so exhausted that it was like, oh boy, like this is tough.
James, I've retired from reporting. I've pissed off too many people in the last few months. Do you have any names that you're comfortable sharing that you're hearing potential Doug Christie assistants?
I've heard, like, just I don't know if any of this is real, but, you know, we heard Dave Yeager's name mentioned a couple of times down the stretch of the season. Of course, the Milwaukee Bucks just flamed out in the playoffs for the third straight year, and Dave is on Doc Rivers' staff, and I think we have to figure out what's going to happen.
Doc would make a great assistant.
Well, yeah, I would. I'd be pretty good at it.
There it is. Doc. So the other name I've heard surface a little bit here and there is Mike Woodson. Again, like whether any of these things actually, you know, come to fruition, Mike Woodson has been a longtime NBA head coach. He was at Indiana coaching the Hoosiers the last couple of years. And if I'm not mistaken, he's a former Sacramento King from the early 80s. Well, from the 80s when the team first moved here. Like, look, there are going to be guys out there, and some people can say, oh, I don't want that guy. I don't want that guy. Like, it doesn't matter what anyone thinks of those people as head coaches. It's what Doug Christie thinks of them as support players for him, as offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, as a voice in his ear. It's just experience. That's what the Kings need. They need experience behind Doug to support him in the right way.
How are you going to say hell no to an assistant coach? Like, come on, man. Y'all got to check yourselves a little bit.
Yeah.
All right, man. Relax. One thing that I do hope returns, I don't know if it's Mike Woodson or not, but Bean Money. Bean Money will be back next year. Unfortunately, the show must go on. And I got Bean Money popping off tonight. Anthony Edwards, points, rebounds, assists.
I would say, fortunately, the show must go on, given the fact that...
Oh, well, no. Bean Money, the show going to go on.
Okay.
But without Bean Money, it's sad. It's sad. Anthony Edwards, points, rebounds, assists, 40.5. I'm going more. Jalen Green, 15.5 points. I'm going more.
Uh-huh.
He gets 25 tonight. Boy, LeBron James,
yep.
One dunk. I'm going more.
Okay.
I got Buddy Hield, 1.5 three-pointers made. I'm going more. And Aaron Judge, got baseball in here. It's a demon. 0.5 singles. Going more.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going more. Go download Prize Picks app, put in the promo code KIFM. You get $50 with your first $5 lineup. That's promo code KIFM. You must be present in certain states. Go to PrizePicks.com for more details. Prize Picks, run your game.
Oh, wow, Filthy McNasty. My God, what a joke.
Filthy is on the board.
What a
Filthy
joke.
Filthy is on the board.
What a joke this show has become. Filthy McNasty getting on the board. Man. Well, great stuff as always, James. Who you got, James? Timberwolves or Lakers tonight?
I'm going to go Timberwolves. I think this thing ends.
My goodness. All right. Well, you can catch that game.
That'd be crazy.
Yeah, that'd be... I mean, is it crazier than if the Warriors get rid of the Rockets in five?
No. I picked the Timberwolves to win that series, and I'd be shocked if they won in five. That'd be crazy.
Timberwolves and Lakers, that's coming up at 6:30 here on ESPN 1320. In the meantime, we're going to head over to 102.5 if you want to come hang out with us there. We got tickets to the Wu-Tang Clan to give away. If not, make sure you're back here at 10 a.m. with James Hamcom and the Insiders here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Alex Rodriguez.